Lecture 28, Supreme Court and Laissez-faire.
In two previous lectures, we've looked at the Supreme Court as a contributor to and a reactor to the American tradition of political thought. Lecture 17 examined its role in advancing the Jacksonian vision of liberalism and its retrenchment from the Federalist or Marshallian notion of liberalism. Lecture 24 treated its approach to equality and federalism after Reconstruction. Here we're going to look at the Supreme Court in the posture it assumed in the battle between minimal government liberalism that was posited by the social Darwinists and the active state liberalism of Roosevelt and the progressive era. In a way, all the cases and the opinions that we'll be talking about here can be summed together under the legal title of Roosevelt v. Sumner, or perhaps active state liberalism against minimal state liberalism, because those are the issues that the court was churning with at the turn of the 20th century. Now, recall that social Darwinism was hostile to any governmental effort to alleviate the effects of capitalist dislocation and economic inequality. The answer was individuals had to pick themselves up, pull themselves up by the bootstraps, and move on. Get capital. Sumner noted that the aggregation of large fortunes is not at all a thing to be regretted. It is a sign of the progress of society. Government, both state and federal, should stay out of the allocation of property. Government's proper concerns should be the property of men and the honor of women. These it has to protect against crime. Sumner also said in an article called Wages, written in 1882, that there was such a thing as liberty of contract. The capitalist employer is led by self-interest to try to keep wages down just exactly as he tries to prevent waste of raw material or wear and tear of fixed capital. The employee is led by self-interest to try to get all the wages he can. The struggle is legitimate and necessary. The result of it is that the supply and demand distribute the capital among laboring wage receivers in the proportion which conduces to the maximum of production under all the existing circumstances. If a man knows how to earn more than he is getting, Sumner concludes, he ought to insist on getting more where he is, or he should change. If an employer can get equally competent men at lower wages, he ought to get them or lower wages. If we depart at all from this rule, this supply and demand rule, we entangle ourselves in an endless muddle of sentimental rubbish. We lower production and contract the welfare of all. There is therefore no social question or struggle of class involved in wages. No social question. Government has no business messing with wages or trying to regulate hours. It is not a concern of the government. It is a concern of the agreement, the contract between the worker and the employer. Yet, the national and state legislatures, under populist and progressive pressure, passed many reformist laws as the 19th century turned into the 20th century. The do-gooders were out there, and they were grabbing the levers of legislative authority and passing legislation to advance their interests. Unable to consistently win in legislatures, both the national legislature, the Congress, or in state legislatures, Darwinist devotees turned their attention to the courts. You go where you think you have a chance to win. If you can't win on one playing field, you move to another one. Now, there are two dimensions on which the Darwinist challenge to economic regulation advanced. One was an attack on federal governmental regulation. The second was an attack on state governmental regulation. Now, this makes perfect sense in light of what Sumner said, because Sumner said, government should stay out of this. all government.